Archibosai, good morning. Let's begin. Beautiful Gemara today. Today's daf is Yotes. And we are picking up on Yotes. Oh, good. Yotes, some of the Aleph, second line here. V'lo nivrecha sakofsin. So let's remember again, the Mishnah was speaking about the different items that a person is obligated to distance from the kosel, from the wall of their friend. So one of the items was nivrecha sakofsin, a launderer's pool, which almost like kishmo kainhu, hole in the ground filled with water and detergent. Although again, we'll see, interestingly enough, for detergent, they often used to use dried animal excrement, which is interesting. I don't know if it leaves the right scent, but apparently it gets out the stains. So we'll discuss this idea. So we'll say, now the Gemara introduces the idea that there are two different types of pools that were used. Look at Rashi. Min ha-mechamtson, nivrecha sheshorn bo ha-sabigodim, yom o yomayim, bitsoas klovim, So this was the pool in which they used to soak the clothing. This is called the mechamtson. So this was the pool in which they used to soak the clothing in the detergent, ultimately, again, until the clothing would become clean. Look at Rashi. Nivrecha shekovsin umeshav shefin bo, mitok shamayim nissin lemei rachok, tzarech laharchik dal ramos. So we'll say a najon is what we call the pool in which they would scrub the clothing. So there was the pool in which they soaked the clothing, the pool in which they scrubbed the clothing. So what's the chilek? So the Gemara says, when the Mishnah says that you have to distance the launderer's pool from the wall three tefachim, that's talking about the mechamtson, the pool in which they soak the clothing. But the najon, which was the pool in which they scrubbed the clothing, that has to be dalet amos. Rashi says, why dalet amos? Because we're both saying the pool in which they scrubbed the clothing, the water would spritz, right? The water would go all over the place. So as such, you have to distance that pool from your friend's wall even more. So that's at a distance of dalet amos. Right? So that supports this. Nivrechas hakovsin dalet amos. So the Braisa supports this, because the Braisa says that a launderer's pool must be placed at a distance of Dalet Amos from my friend's wall. I have a ha'anan tenan, gimel tefachim. But one second, we learned in the Mishnah that the launderer's pool only has to be distant three tefachim. Elo lav shma mino kidrav Nachman. Rather, again, you have to accept the distinction of Rav Nachman, that it's two different pools. The Mishnah's pool, which is a pool that has to be distanced three tefachim, is a pool ultimately used for soaking. And the Braisa's pool, which is the pool that has to be distanced four amos, is a pool that is used for scrubbing. To which the Gemara says, V'ikad Ramil Humirma. Others pose this entire discussion as a kasha, as a contradiction. Tnan, we learned in the Mishnah, Nivrecha Sakovsin Gimel Tefachim. So we learned in our Mishnah that a launderer's pool has to be placed at a distance of three tefachim from my friend's wall. I have a hotanyo arba amos, but yet the Braisa says it has to be placed at a distance of dalet amos. So how do I reconcile that contradiction? To which the Gemara says, Hachim Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said, Amra baravu alo kasha. It's not a contradiction. Kan min ha-machamtson, kan min hanajon. So to which Rav Nachman comes along and says, in the name of Rabba Baravua, it's not a contradiction, rather, again, different kinds of pools. For the pool in which the laundry, in which the clothing is soaked, that pool only requires a distance of three tefachim from my friend's wall. From the pool in which the clothing is scrubbed, that pool requires a distance of dalet amos. Rav Chiya b'Reid Rav Avya, masnila behedja. So Rav Chiya b'Reid Rav Avya, he had a different version. He quoted this teaching explicitly. Ela im kein hirchik misvas mechamtson lekosel gimel tefachim. Suppose I see the difference over here. The difference over here in Rav Chiya b'Reid Rav Avya's version is that he doesn't use the lashon of nivrecha sakovsin. So also the reason why this discussion even begins is because the Mishnah chooses to use a more generic lashon of nivrecha sakovsin along this pool. The problem that we're left with is at least originally we thought there's just one kind of launderer's pool. Then we find out that there are two different types of launderer's pools. So it turns out that depending on the type, will determine the setback. So Rav Chiya b'Reid Rav Avya, in an effort to dispel the ambiguity, says it explicitly, and he says you have to distance the mechamtson. So the mechamtson is the pool that was used for scrubbing. That has to be distanced from my friend's wall three tefachim. Fine. So again, we'll say bottom line is the din of a launderer's pool depends on what kind of pool. If it's the pool that's used for scrubbing, excuse me, for soaking, which is the mechamtsan, three tefachim. If it's the pool that's used for scrubbing where there's a lot of splash, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of spritzing of the water everywhere, then that has to be at a setback of Dalet Amas. Says the Gemara, Sod Besid. So remember again, we'll say the way that the Mishnah read is that the Mishnah said that if I'm going ahead and digging a pit, so I can't dig it next to the pit of my friend and all these other pits as well. Rather, I have to distance it from the wall of my friend, three tefachim, v'sad besid. And I also plaster the walls of my pit with plaster or with lime. Okay, so asks the Gemara the following kasha. This ibaylo, this sad besid tanan of Dilma, o sad besid. So the Gemara has an interesting question. Does the Mishnah teaching me that in addition to the setback, I also have to plaster the walls? Or is the Mishnah teaching me that I could either use the setback or plaster the walls? In other words, is this an either or, that these are the two ways in which I go ahead and can dig a pit in proximity to my friend, either with the setback or with the plastering of the walls? Or is it both? I have to distance my pit from my friend's wall, three tefachim, and I have to plaster the walls of my pit. To which the Gemara says, Pshita, divisad besid tinan. It is clear, it is obvious, that the Mishnah is to be read visad besid. That it's not an either or, rather the Mishnah is teaching me, I must observe the proper setback, and I must coat the walls of the bar with plaster, with lime. Essentially, it's lime. With lime. So the Gemara says, how do I know this? Because if you want to say that the Mishnah is saying, telling me, O Sad Besid, that either I could have the setback, or I could plaster the walls. Im kein, la'arvinhu velis ninhu. If that's the case, then combine the first two parts of the Mishnah into one statement, and end off with that statement, O Sad Besid. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. La'arvinhu, letarte babi reisho mitziyasa, Dahasam Osad Besitinan. Shabbos, I remember again. There are two cases in the Mishnah. Case number one in the Mishnah is I cannot dig my bar in close proximity to my friend's bar unless, of course, I distance my bar three tefachim. I distance my bar three tefachim. That's case number one. Now, the way the Mishnah reads there, the way the Great One is suggesting is it says, Visad Besid, and I also have to plaster the walls of my bar. Now, we'll say the second case that the Mishnah was talking about is the case of distancing, you know, the olive pulp, the manure, the salt, lime, stones, all these different things. I have to distance those things from my friend's wall. Osad besid. Or I can go ahead and plaster it with lime. Now, both saying, so says the Gemara, if the first part of the Mishnah is to be read, Osad besid, then what? Then I should really group those two first cases of the Mishnah into one case, because it turns out that what? They have the same halacha, which is there has to be a setback of three tefachim, or you could plaster it with lime. The fact that the Mishnah breaks it up into two cases indicates to us what? That the girsa from the first case is not osad besid, rather what? Visad besid. That halacha l'maaseh, if I'm digging a pit in my property, I must, number one, observe a three tefach bar setback. That's number one. And number two, I must also plaster the walls of my bar. So the Gemara says, Dilma Mishum Delo Dami. Well, no, that's not a good raya, says the Gemara. Maybe the Mishnah taught the first two cases independently. Why? Because they don't resemble each other. Mishum Delo Dami, Hayazeka. Because they both say the damage described in the Reisha, we'll call the first case, and this damage described in the second case are not the same. Reisha, Hezeka, Dimisuna. Ultimately, again, I will say, in the Reisha, the issue, the potential damage, comes from moisture. Seifa has Zeka Dahavlo. But ultimately, again, the Seifa, the second part of the Mishnah, so the damage to my friend's wall potentially comes from the Heva, from heat. So the Gemara says the following, Tashma, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Sela Haba Biyadayim, Zechofer Boro Mikan, Vezechofer Bor Mikan. So let's remember again, this was the first case we started with yesterday. What is Sela Haba Biyadayim? Earth that is very fine. It crumbles in my hands. So what happens if I have earth that's very fine and crumbles in my hands? So this one digs his bar on his side. This one digs his bar on his side. Ze Marchik Gimel Tvachim Visad Besid. This one distances himself from his friend three tefachim and plasters the walls of his pit with sid. And this one also goes in and distances his pit from his friend three tefachim and plasters the walls. So says the Gemara, Taima deba biyadayim. Now the reason why it sounds like that I need both the setback and the plastering is why? Because I'm dealing with very fine soil. Halo ba biyadayim. But it sounds like over here that's what? If it were not fine soil, then lo. Then I will say, as much as I might be obligated to observe the setback, I'm not obligated to what? I'm not obligated to go ahead and plaster the walls of the pit. So this would be a raya to the idea that the Mishnah is to be read O Sad Besid and not this Sad Besid. There are two options as to how I can go ahead and remedy potential damage to my friend's pit, which is either the setback or the plastering of the walls. To which the Gemara says, No. Who had din da'af agad lo babi adayim nami sad besid? It's not true. Rather, again, even without fine earth, meaning even in a case of regular earth, the halacha is, I must observe a setback, number one, and number two, I must coat the walls of my bar with plaster. So why does the Gemara bring down the case of Babi Adayim, very fine soil? Oh, I'll tell you why. Because I would have thought that what? I would have thought that since it's Babi Adayim, since ultimately the soil is very fine, maybe I need even a bigger setback. Maybe three tefachim is not enough. I have to set back my bar even more. Kamash Malon, no, that's not the case. That Aloch Lamaisi, even with Babi Adayim, a three tefach setback is going to be fine. So I'll say, so bottom line, the way we end off over here is, the Mishnah is to be read Visad Besid, namely, that if I'm digging a bar in my property, the halacha is, I must observe two things. Number one, a three tefach setback, and number two, ultimately, I must align the pit walls of the pit with Sid, again, all in order to ensure that my pit does not have a detrimental impact on my friend's property. Next, Marchikin es hagefes ves hazevel ves hamelach ves haslam. Remember again, case number two in the Mishnah was, if I have gefes, so we'll say is the olive pulp, right? The left, after you squeeze the olives, leftover stuff, zevel is manure, melach is salt, sloim are stones that are used to create a fire. So it says the, and again, so in this case, the Gemara said again, yeah, halacha ma'is, you have to distance it three tefachim. So it says the Gemara, tanan hasam, so we learned there, bameh tomnin, ubema'in tomnin. We'll say now again, we'll get into some interesting Hilchos Shabbos here. Literally, Bametom means, with what may you insulate, and with what may you not insulate. So we'll say, so remember again, so let's say I want to have hot food on Shabbos. So what do I do? So I go ahead, I heat up the food in Shabbos, Erev Shabbos, excuse me, and I wrap it. I want to wrap it in something in order to preserve the heat. That's called hatmana. So is hatmana permitted on Shabbos or not? And the answer is, it depends. What does it depend on? From a halachic perspective, we assume that there are two different types of hatmana. There's what we call a davar hamosif hevel and davar sheino mosif hevel. Something that goes ahead and increases the temperature of the item, and something that does not increase the temperature or the heat of the item. So the halacha is, if it's a davar sheino mosif hevel, if it's a type of insulation that does not increase the heat, not increase the temperature, then you could be matmin, then you could insulate your pot with that on Shabbos. If it's mosif hevel, if it increases heat, then you may not use it on Shabbos. So that's the Gemara's, it's not hasam. With what can you insulate your pot, and with what can you not insulate your pot? In tomnin, lo begefes, v'lo bezevel, v'lo bemelach. So you can't go ahead and insulate your pot with olive pulp, with manure, with salt, with plaster, below bechol, nor with sand, bein lachin bein yevashin, whether it's wet sand or whether it's dry sand. So to which the Gemara says, interesting enough, Rabbi Yosai, that whole list resembles our Mishnah with one exception, and that's chol, with sand. So ask the Gemara, ma'ishna hacha diktani sloy, below katani chol. So we'll say, interestingly enough, in our Mishnah here, all these same materials are listed, but yet they quoted stones used to create a fire, our Mishnah, v'lo katani chol, but yet our Mishnah doesn't mention sand. U'mashna hasam, but yet by Shabbos, diktani chol, v'lo katani slime. Yet the Mishnah in Shabbos discusses what? Discusses sand, and doesn't discuss stones. Which is, what's the pshat? Meaning, we'll say, because remember again, what's the common denominator in the list in our Mishnah? These are all items that could be used for insulation purposes. So technically, meaning they generate heat. So if they generate heat, then they should be in this list of insulation items as well. So ask the Gemara, so why is it that our Mishnah makes reference of stones, no reference of sand, and the Mishnah on Shabbos makes reference of sand, no reference of stone? Amar of Yosef, very simple, Lefi she'in darkon shol b'nei adam lahapnen bislon. Alright, so Rabbi says it's a very simple reason, because people don't normally insulate their pots with stones. That's why it's not there. Amar li Abaye, the chidarkon shol b'nei adam lahatmin b'gizei tzemer u'lashonos ha'agamon. So says Abaye, but is it the derech of people to insulate their pots? We'll say gizei tzemer are wool shearings. Lashonos shal argamon are strips of purple wool. Do people use those items to insulate their pots? To which the Gemara says v'hatis. And now the assumption is no. Yet disanyo. Yet, what does the Braisa say? The Braisa says that one could insulate their pot with, or say, so gizei tzemer are the wool shearings, tzifei tzemer is combed wool, l'shono shel argamon means strips of purple wool, umuchin, or say muchin means tufts of wool, ve'imetatlin also, the Braisa say, even though you're permitted to use them for atmana purposes, they're muktza. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. Imitatlan osam, shein muktzin l'melechas megadim. Because it will say, these items were normally used, this material was used to make clothing. So therefore, again, they would be muktza on Shabbos, because l'maisa, you can't fashion clothing on Shabbos. So interestingly enough, you could go ahead and you could use them to insulate your pot, but they're muktza. So we'll say, I know you're thinking to yourself, well, how does that help me? Right? If I could go ahead and use them to insulate my pot, but they're muktza. So it's simple. All you'd have to do in those kind of cases is you would lift the pot out of the insulation and you would leave the insulation as is. And even if the insulation ends up moving as a result, ultimately, of my moving of the pot, that's called tiltul min atzad, indirect movement of muktza, which in general is not problematic. So the point the Gemara is making over here is the Gemara brings down examples of insulating items that were not commonly used for insulation. Yet the Gemara discusses it. So if that's the case, even if you want to tell me that stones were not normally used for insulation purposes, you should still include it in the list. El Amar Abaye, Yogid Alav Reos. So this is actually very interesting. This is a pasuk from Eov. Yogid Alav Reos means its friend will testify about it. We'll say, what does that mean? So what that means is that what the Gemara is suggesting is that sometimes once the Mishnah gives a partial list, or the Gemara gives a partial list, that partial list tells me about the rest of the list. In other words, once a list has been made and it's complete somewhere, anywhere else where it quotes part of the list, that tells me that what? That it's really the whole list. The Gemara is just recording it shorthand. That's what it means. Yagid alav reyo. Tana hacha slaim v'hu adin l'chol. So we'll say, so remember again, our Mishnah discusses stones, and of course included in that same category of stones is also sand. Tana hasam chol v'uadim l'slam. And therefore again in Shabbos, when it talks about sand, sand also includes stones. So we'll say, so therefore Abayi's logic is, the Gemara doesn't always have to quote the full list of items. Rather, once you've established a list, once you quote that list shorthand, it tells you it's like a cue that includes the entire list as well. So the Gemara says, Amali Rava. Rava says, Iyagid alav reyo, listenin hu lekula bechada, velisne chada minayhu beidach. So we'll say, v'hu adin leidach. So Rava says, 1 second. If you're going to claim Yagid alav reyo, so then what has to happen is the following. In one of the places, either here or in Shabbos, the list should be complete. The list should include everything, which means you should have one list that includes all the items mentioned, including stones and sand. And then in the other place, in the other discussion, let it just quote one of the items from that list, and what? I will know that it applies to the rest of that list as well. But Rava says that's not what's happening over here. Here in Baba Basra, we're quoting the whole list, minus what? Minus sand. And in Shabbos, we're quoting the whole list, minus stones. So Rava says it doesn't make sense. You can't claim Yagid Alav Reo. To which we must say, Ela Amar Rava, Hasam Hainu Taimu Dela Katani Slaim, Mishum De Mishtachi Le Likdera. So Rava says, listen, the reason why Masechah Shabbos, it does not include stones, in the list of things that can be used for hatmana is why? Because stones could break a pot. Because they will say it's not advisable to use stones ultimately to insulate your kederi, your pot, because they could smash it. Hacha, because let's remember again, we're talking about earthenware utensils. Hacha, hainu tamid lo katanichol. Why does our Mishnah not include a discussion about sand? Mishum de mechamimi chayim o mikariri karir. Because they will say the way that sand works is that sand essentially conducts the temperature of the item it is surrounding. So if you surround something cold with sand, so the sand will preserve the coldness, and if you wrap sand around something that is hot, it will preserve the heat. Because of that, sand itself does not pose any objective danger to the wall. Sand, perhaps surrounding something hot, may pose an objective danger, but sand itself is not considered to be a hazard to the wall. Rav Oshia brought down in Rav Oshia's list of things that can be damaging to a wall. He does have sand. Hasam bimisuna, to which the Gemara answers there, he's talking about damp sand. So we'll say, in a case of damp sand, that could absolutely go ahead and damage the wall. Tana didan nami, listen to the misuna. So why doesn't our Tana also bring in sand and establish it as moist sand? So therefore it's the moisture that's problematic. Hatanale amasamayim. So again, when talking about moisture, we already dealt with moisture. The Mishnah brings in the case of the irrigation channel. So in the case of the irrigation channel, a person has to make sure to move it at least 3 tfachim away from the wall, to which the Gemara says, Atumilo katani amasamayim vekatani rechas hakofsin. But 1 second, that's not a good rice. The Gemara is suggesting we don't have to bring down moist sand. Why not? Because Lamaisa, at the end of the day, we've already spoken about damaging forces because of moisture. We already have over here a discussion about the amasamayim, the irrigation channel, to which the Gemara says, but 1 second, you also speaking about the launderer's pool. Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. You're also speaking about the launderer's pool. So at the end of the day, again, you're talking about two things that damage because of moisture, to which the Gemara says, no. Hanani tzrichi. We'll say, first wide line on the bottom of your tassel and aleph. I need both of those cases, and I'll tell you why. Di tana amasamayim mishum de kaviya. So we'll say, I would have thought it's the irrigation channel that poses a danger to the wall. Why? Because it's kavua. Because it will say it's established in place. Aval nivrechas akovs in the lokavia. But it will say a launderer's pool, which is not necessarily set in place. I guess people moved their launderer's pool with relative ease. Aim low. I might have thought that perhaps because it's not fixed in place, therefore, again, it does not go ahead and pose a danger, to which the Gemara says Mishum, and if it would have said just a launderer's pool, Mishum the Kavu Vakaimi, because we'll say that is standing water. And maybe because of standing water, ultimately again, that's what poses the danger to the wall. Aval Amas Mayim Lo, but perhaps the channel which flows doesn't pose a danger, therefore Tzricha. Therefore they are both absolutely necessary. So bottom line, what it comes down to is that as much as we thought that the cases of Hatmana, right, of Shabbos and Vabasa, the things that generate heat to a wall, are really comparable. They are comparable in 98% of the cases, but there will be certain cases which lend themselves to Atmana and not to the wall, and certain cases which lend themselves to the wall and not to Atmana. Good. Next. Marchiginas Azraim Vesamacharishas. Rosim again, remember next case in the Mishnah. Person, if I'm planting in my field, I have to distance my seeds 3 tefachim from my friend's wall, and as well as the plow. So it says the Gemara Azraim, Tefuk Le Mishamacharisha. Rosim, I don't understand. That's really one and the same. Meaning, obviously, if I'm planting seeds, then I need what? I need room for the plow. So why do I have to mention these cases separately? They're really one and the same. To which the Gemara says, Mapoles Yad. Because that's the case where I'll say, I'm not planting, with farming utensils. Rather, what am I doing? I'm dropping seeds in the ground by hand. So therefore, again, in that kind of case, I don't need a plow. Therefore, the Mishnah is teaching me that even in that case, when I'm planting by hand, I still have to what? I still have to leave a distance of 3 tefachim between my planting and my friend's wall. I have a sefuk lei mishum zroim, to which the Gemara says, but 1 second, if that's the case, then by the macharisha, why don't you say that, of course, any case where I'm plowing, I have to leave room, why? Because of seeds, right? In other words, I have that, forget my macharisha, I'm seeding, so I have to go ahead and leave room for that, to which the Gemara says, bechoresh le'ilanos. We're talking about a case of Yerabosai where the plowing is being done for the benefit of trees. Look at Rashi, bechoresh le'ilanos, sheyesh sham ilanos, miyamim rabim ubalach rosh tachteim lahashvichan. I have trees that have been there already for a very long time, and I'm looking to plow around them in order to somehow improve them. I have a sefer kli mishum mayo. Rabbi says, listen to how beautiful this is. Again, amazing, by the way, that we're learning about the ilanos mayim, right? Tu bishvat, incredible, incredible idea. So it says the Gemara the following: why don't you learn out that it's going to be problematic because of mayim? And what does that mean? So Rabbi says, presumably, I have to go ahead and water those seeds, which means there's going to be a heavy concentration of water by that seeded area. So that's why I need the setback. Because remember, again, we've already established in the previous section of the Mishnah that any time where there is intense moisture, you need to have a setback from your friend's kosel. To which the Gemara listens to how beautiful this is. Tana, Eretz Yisrael Koi. We'll say, this is talking about an Eretz Yisrael. And what's the din? Agricultural din in Eretz Yisrael. The Ksiv, Lematar Hashamayim Tishtemayim. We'll say, no, in Eretz Yisrael, you could rely on the Ribono Shel Olam to water your plants. Right? In Eretz Yisrael, again, Lematar Hashamayim Tishtemayim. Ultimately, again, for the rain of the heavens, that's how you water. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is apparently, again, in Eretz Yisrael agriculture, so there's not the heavy concentration of irrigation like you have in other places, because it's sustained, ultimately, again, by the rain of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we'll say, so this, of course, is talking about in the perfect world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us this haftacha, right? That l'ntar shemayim tishtemayim, that I'll take care of your crops. All right, in a less than perfect model, HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead. You know, we'll say, one of the most incredible things that the modern day state of Israel has produced is drip irrigation, meaning, again, this is how they turned it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible to see it. They've turned deserts into blossoming tracts of land through this chap of drip irrigation. If you've ever seen it, it's a very simple chap. I'm not going to do a whole shiur on this now, but again, if you want to condense it, it's running garden hoses along long streams of area and puncturing little holes into it. It doesn't sound like rocket science, but they developed this whole system for it, which Mamish is responsible for turning Eretz Yisrael into a blossoming, beautiful land. Okay, in any event, Zimar says the following: Memra, Dizroim, Amadeis, Dizroim, Litzdodin, Kamishkarshi. Are you saying that ultimately, again, are you saying that that roots grow sideways? So let's analyze this for just a moment. Remember, the Gemara is saying that when I plant something, initially when I plant something, I have to distance my seeds, which will become a plant, from my friend's wall 3 tefachim. What's the concern with seeds? The concern with seeds are the roots, and the roots ultimately, again, can negatively impact the kosel of my friend. Now, again, remember, whether that's an actual kosel or whether that's the kosel of his bar, either way, it's going to grow sideways and could negatively impact. So Gemara says, this presupposes that when you plant something, the roots grow sideways. V'hotna, but we learned, ha-mavrich ha-sagef, and ba'aretz, we'll say this is very interesting. We've learned this in a number of different places. If you take a vine, if you're a vinter, that's the right word? Vinter, yeah. Good. If you're a vinter and you want to increase the volume of your vines, I don't mean the produce, I mean you want to increase the number of your vines. It's a very simple chap to do this. What do? You take a vine that's planted in the ground, you take the part that's growing out of the ground, you bend it over back into the ground, it takes root. Once it takes root, you snip it in the middle, and Baruch Hashem, now you have two vines. That's called Hamavrich. I'm giving like a whole crash course on agriculture today. It's amazing. Hamavrich es hagefen bar. So we'll say this is called Hamavrich es hagefen. This is literally bending over the vine, planting the top so that it takes root, snipping it in the middle afterwards. Im ein al gaba offer shlosha tefachim lo yavi zera aleha. So we'll say the halacha is that if the roots of the vine are not more than 3 tefachim into the ground, you cannot plant another seed on top of it. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, Hamabrich es hagefen, fine. Let's take a look at this. He says, Gefen yechidi sheim bizroim shetzla, mishum irvuv, de'in kerem bapachos, mechamish kefanim, shtayim, keneged shtayim, ve'echal yosei zonov, so we'll say, remember, there's no din of klaya kerem over here. Why is there no din of klaya kerem? Because klaya kerem only applies when you have a vineyard. We actually saw this a few days ago. What's the basic definition of a vineyard? Basic definition of a vineyard is 5 vines. 2, 2, and 1 that comes out like the tail. So in this case over here, let's say I have a vine, and I want to plant a seed of something else. There's no klaya kerem, because there's no kerem, there's no vineyard. But I do have to make sure that whatever the seed of this other plant that I'm planting does not get nutrients. Rashi says, does not get any of its nutrients from the vine. How do I make sure of that? I make sure that there's a minimum of 3 tefachim ultimately again between my seed and between the vine that is growing. So the Gemara says, as long as there's more than 3 tefachim of dirt between the seed and between the roots of the vine, I'm good to go. So Bosse, what do you see about that? You see from there is that roots grow down, roots don't grow sideways. But we learn that what? You can plant this seed on either side of the vine, just not directly on top within 3 tefachim. So Bosse, from here you see that roots grow down, they don't grow sideways. To which the Gemara says, Amarav Chaga, B'shem Rabbi Yossi, Mepnei Shemachligdin Esakarka, Umalin Afar Tichuach. You're right, there's a different issue over here. We'll say that when the roots grow down. The problem with the roots growing down, look at Rashi, Shemachligdin Esakarka, Eitzel HaKos, literally Machlin Esakarka means they break up the earth. What does that mean? Eitzel HaKos, Abim Koman, Umalin Afar Tichuach, Umismotet Karka Yesod HaKos, let's tell this. So we'll say, so apparently, the way the Gemara understands the dynamic of seed growth is the following. When the roots grow down, there's displaced earth. There's displaced earth. That displaced earth kind of pushes the surface soil a bit up. That displacement of surface soil, if it occurs next to the wall, could erode the foundation of the wall. So the Gemara is admitting now that the seeds, that the roots grow downwards. Again, by the way, what we're ultimately going to see is that different plants have different roots that grow different ways. So we're going to see a difference between trees and a difference between seeds. But even if you accept the fact that the roots grow downwards, as they grow down, the displaced soil bumps up the surface soil, displaces the surface soil, and as a result, ultimately, again, and as a result, if it's done too close to the wall, it could erode the foundation of the wall. Therefore, the setback is necessary in order to ensure that the wall remains stable. So we'll say the next thing is, person has to distance urine from their friend's wall 3 tefachim. We'll say a person is permitted to urinate on the side of their friend's wall. Now, we'll say, so understand, so you say to this, like, all right, you know what, I can see already the wheels are turning. Baruch Hashem, everybody's awake now. So just understand, obviously, so statements like this have had much greater ramification in the absence of indoor plumbing. So again, a person needs to relieve themselves. The Shah is, where am I permitted to do that? Where am I not permitted to do that? So the Gemara Rav Arachana says over here that a person is permitted to go out and urinate by the side of their friend's wall. Dichsiv, interesting, this, the riot, this is quite interesting. Dichsiv, v'echrasi la'achav mashtin bikir, v'atzer v'azo b'yisos. Well, this is actually amazing. So Malachim Aleph, so remember again, Achav, who was an exceptionally evil king, Melech Yisrael, the husband of Izebel, so he is told by the Navi that his family is going to be wiped out. And the Lashon the Navi uses is, I will cut off every Mashtin Bekir. Now, Mashtin Bekir literally means people who urinate against the wall. So the Gemara understands this to be a reference to every male member of the home of Achav. So you see from here, the Gemara understands over here the fact that the Navi uses Lashon or describes a man as a mashtin bikir, someone who urinates against the wall. Rashi says, Amma derech b'nei adam kein. So we see that this is normal behavior for people. So the Gemara says, but 1 second, what does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says you have to distance urine from your friend's wall 3 tefachim. So that tells you that what? You can't urinate on your friend's wall. To which the Gemara says, Tashma lo yishpoch adam, hasam b'shovchin. Oh, Shabbos says, listen to this. The Mishnah is referring to shovchin. What does shovchin mean? Rashi says, avit male v'shovcho sham. So we'll say, if you can imagine for a second, so that's if avit is a receptacle. I guess what you would call like a bedpan. So that's saying if a person is emptying a receptacle in which they go ahead and they keep urine, you can't dump that out on your friend's wall. Because first of all, again, it's a lot more urine. That you can't do. And I will say, that goes back to the moisture issue. Right? You can't do that because that could erode the wall. But a person's relieving themselves, so a person has the ability to do that. Tashma lo yishpach adamayim b'tzad kozo shachavero, ele imkin hircha k'meno gimot tvachim, hasan nami b'shovchin. So I will say, again, the what we'll call, for lack of a better term, but the urine setback is only a din in shofchin, is only a din like when you're emptying out volumes of urine. I mean, like the bedpan, person is emptying out, that's when there is a setback. But a person is just relieving themselves stam, a person is permitted to do that against their friend's wall. Tashma, lo yashin adam mayim besad kosel shechavero, ela imkein hirchek mimeno gimel tvachim. But one second, you have a brisa that says, a person should not urinate by the side of his friend's wall, unless he distances himself 3 tvachim. But then darmorim, also, when is that true? Bekosel levenim. But say, that's only true if it is a wall made, levenim will literally translate as bricks. Right? So, bricks. So Rashi says, why is that? Rashi says, bekosel levenim, shame sheltit, because these are made out of mortar, that was dried in the sun. So we'll say walls like this that are made out of vein, made out of bricks, their type of bricks, when exposed to too much moisture, it would erode the building material. So on those kind of walls of levenim, even if a person is just urinating themselves, ultimately they have to distance themselves. So but when it comes to a kosel made of stones, bechdeshel of yazik, then a person has to distance themselves far enough that what? That they don't damage the wall. Vikamo. And ultimately, again, how much do you have to distance yourself in order not to damage the wall? Tefach. Ultimately, a person should distance themselves at tefach. So Rashi says over vikamo tefach. Because also if a person urinates too close to the wall, then ultimately, again, there'll be that concentrated moisture where at the base of the wall on the earth, and that concentrated moisture will ultimately erode the wall. Therefore, whenever possible, a person should urinate at least at a distance of 1 tefach from their friend's wall. Again, depending on the building, this is all assuming it's not a kosel shalavanim. If it's a kosel shalavanim, these type of bricks, then really a person should distance themselves 3 tefachim. So, what happens? So, Bosa, here's the interesting question. What happens if, Lamaisa, look at Rashi, the wall is built on Sunma? Rashi says, Im kosel zeb banoi besela, deleka lamechash betishtush karaka. So, Bosa, this concern about urinating directly next to the wall or on the wall, where there's a concentration of moisture which will erode the wall, is only when the wall is built on a dirt surface. What happens if the wall is built on rock? Right? On rock. Right, meaning the ground is rock, then again, there's no concern that too much moisture will go ahead and erode the base of the wall. So the halacha is mutter. So we'll say, in that case, ultimately, again, it's mutter to urinate right by the wall. To which the Gemara says, Tiyufta de Rabbi Bar Bar Chana. This seems to refute the position of Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, because remember again, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana said that what? That you are permitted to go ahead and urinate literally right on the wall of your friend. Yet we see over here that Rabbi, with the exception ultimately again of the tsunma, of where the wall itself is built on rocky, on rocks, the aloch is that what? Person should distance themselves somewhat. To which the Gemara says, Tiyufta, Enochinami, this would be a refutation of his position. I have a Hara Babrachana Krokamar, but one second I will say, but Rabbi Babrachana quoted a Pasuk. Right, he quoted a Pasuk by Achav, that Vichrasi the Achav Mashtin Bekir. So the Navi itself refers to a man as someone who urinates against the wall. So it seems to be from this Pasuk that urinating against the wall is permitted. To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam hachi kamar. This is what it means to say. Afidu midi didarki lishtuni bekir lo shaviknale. The Nabi was telling Achav, even those things that normally go ahead and urinate against the wall, I'm going to wipe out from your family. I'm going to wipe out your family in its entirety. Even those things that are mashtin bekir. Umaynihu, what is this a reference to? Kalba. Even a dog. So the Navi was telling Achav that even the dogs associated with your mishpacha are going to be wiped out. Amar Rav Tubi Bar Kisna Amar Shmuel. Rokik Eino Mema'it Bechala. So we'll say now we get into an interesting halacha. The halacha is fine. Just by way of introduction. So the halacha is, Rabbi say, that if you have tumah in a home, let's say, and that home is closed off, so the mice, again, it contains the tumah. If, however, there is an opening of a tefach or more, the tumah is able to escape through that opening. However, if you plug that opening up, then the tumah remains contained, but only if the item with which you plugged the hole is going to be something that we have no expectation the person is going to remove, which normally means something that does not really have a real use. So because it doesn't have a real use, we assume that since you plugged up the wall with it, you're going to leave that plug in there as well. So therefore the Gemara says, Amar Tzuri Bar Kisna Amar Shmuel, Rakik Eino Mema'it B'chala. So if you leave, I will say, Rakik literally is a wafer. If you leave the wafer inside the hole, Memayib Cholom over here means the hole. So the Rakik does not go ahead and diminish the Tafach of space. Now the assumption is, why? Because a person is going to come back and eat the Rakik. A person is going to come back and ultimately take the wafer. To which the Gemara says, "My ear, your rakik, kafilu ava nami." Why do you have to bring in the case of a rakik, ultimately of the wafer, even ava, even something thicker, right? Ava means like a thick piece of cake, so that should also. So the Gemara says, "Lo mi bai kamar." The Gemara says, "What does it mean? Lo mi bai ava kevan de echzilei lo mevatalei." So as it goes without saying that if a person in mamish put a piece of cake, no God fearing Jew is going to get a good piece, let a good piece of cake go to waste. So even if I put it there in that space right now, I know it's consumable. And if I'm going to come back and take it, therefore it does not diminish the space. Aval rokik demimis ema betule mevatule. But I will say a rokik, the wafer, which gets disgusting when left there, I would say that a person may mevatule it. Kamash malon, no. Kamash malon, I will say that a person will find the use for that wafer as well. Therefore, it does not leave it in that space. And therefore, what? And therefore, because it's not going to be left in that space, it does not diminish the tefach by tefach space, and therefore does not contain the tumah. So also, we're going to stop over here for today. I want to share with you a short idea. We're kind of leaving off mid sugya, but Emir Tashem will pick up with it again, Emir Tashem tomorrow. So let me share with you just a short idea and the parashah.